My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And joining me, once again, returning to the show, he is the host of the Emerald Flow Show here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Almost got through a good intro without butchering it. He is the host of that show. He covers all things Noah, all things All Japan, all things really Puro under the umbrella. He is our correspondent from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Some have referred to him as the Samuel Gompers of Canada. It is Gerard D. Trullio.
Hi, Jesse. Thanks for having me back on the show. And I'm quite excited to talk about something that I don't get to talk about on my own show because, like, we don't have any hard and fast rules. Like, I just recorded an episode earlier today, and we covered some Big Japan for the first time in probably at least a year. But I think there's so many other people talking about New Japan that I don't really ever bother talking about it, maybe except for a few comments as an aside. So I'm like really excited to talk about it today.
Yeah, that's what's, you know, the cool thing about your show is that you're really focused on non-New Japan Puro, because, and that's like a huge niche to find, because there's so many, like, a vast majority of Puro podcasts or people covering Japanese pro wrestling are focused on New Japan, and now a lot more Joshi coverage as well. But your show really tries to tackle all of the things in between those two things. And I think, you said, you don't really talk about that much, but that gives off the impression that it's like you're watching New Japan. You know what's going on. You're not like somebody who's just not non-New Japan viewer.
No, I've stuck with New Japan as long as I've stuck with All Japan and Noah, that is to say, like, over 25 years now, since I was about 14 years old. So yeah, I've seen it all.
Yeah, this would be a bad podcast if we start, and you're like, man, you know, I don't really watch New Japan anymore. I'd be like, I don't know. Bad booking by me to get this guest on. But the reason I had you on specifically was because when you were on my 100th episode special, where I basically had everyone come on and give a hot take about wrestling and talk about it for 10 or 15 minutes, your hot take was that Gato should be out as the booker of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And at the time I was like, whoa, that's a hot take, which was kind of the whole point of the episode. So I'm glad you said it. I didn't necessarily like agree with it, but I understood where you were coming from. But now that we're 6 months after that, now that I kind of got through this Dominion show and I've just been thinking a lot more about New Japan, I not only am I with you, but I'm also just like, I feel like the whole situation regarding New Japan's creative decisions has gotten completely ridiculous, and there isn't enough scrutiny out there that's calling it out for what it is, where this is a promotion with no new ideas that rehashes the same, you know, simple angles pretty much on every single show. And it's been this way for years and years. And I'm tired of making excuses. I'm tired of overlooking a lot of the crap that we've had to endure. The fact of the matter is, this is not a well-booked wrestling promotion, and it hasn't been a well-booked wrestling promotion for years now. And I think part of the reason I've been reluctant to kind of admit that is because of the nature of what New Japan Pro Wrestling is, which is, it is a very steady, cyclical promotion where you have your benchmarks throughout the year, where you have Wrestle Kingdom, you have the G1, you have the New Japan Cup, you have the Build to Dominion, you have the Tag League, you have the Best of Super Juniors, right? You get this kind of same stuff every single year that creates an inherent excitement about them. And I also understand, you know, they've lost some wrestlers over time, over the last few years. It takes time to build up new stars, all of that. So I'll think like, oh, New Japan, it's not what it was, but it's still pretty good. And that's certainly true to an extent. There's still a lot of good wrestlers in New Japan. There are still matches that take place in New Japan that are among my favorite matches that I watch every single year. There's still some good in New Japan. It's not total crap, but I feel like I find myself making excuses for what this company has really become, which is a boring company with a lot of wrestlers I don't care about, a match structure that's gotten very repetitive, and a booker that has no new creative ideas and hasn't had them for quite a long time. And I'm just sick of it. And I think that a lot of people are in the same situation I was, where it's like, yeah, I don't really like House of Torture. Like, oh, I don't like all the interference bullshit, but it's still New Japan. It's my bread and butter. It's that good feeling. There's nothing like watching the G1 when it comes out, or it's nothing like watching a Wrestle Kingdom in a big Tokyo Dome show or a big show at Korakuen Hall. And you got kind of sucked into being like, well, it's still holding this level of quality, so it can't be all bad. But when you actually think about the creative effort that's gone into this company over the last few years, when you actually think about what stars have been elevated, which stars have failed to be elevated, what the booking decisions have been, this is a disaster of a company. Like, it is a absolute disaster. There, that doesn't mean to say there's wrestlers I like, and there's some stuff over the last few years that I've enjoyed, but this is a disaster. What this company has become in terms of the roster, in terms of how we feel about the younger wrestlers on the roster, how we feel about some of the older wrestlers or wrestlers that should be in their prime. This thing's a complete mess. And Gato's had enough time to try to figure something out and pivot, and that's clearly not in his playbook. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I'm sick of this, and I don't know how much longer I really want to justify giving New Japan the kind of amount of attention I've been giving it over the last decade, because it's not an enjoyable watch.
Well, first, I would advise to anyone if you are ever feeling like you don't want to give something your attention and you feel don't feel guilty from walking away from it. I don't think that's good for your fandom or just how you sort of consume any type of media. That being said, what's interesting, I thought recently, was the discourse around Dominion. I'm not going to defend the show and say it was great, but I saw a certain type a fan get more pissed off than I was from that show. And I think it's because I have already bracketed out what I think was absolute crap, i.e. House of Torture before. So the turns and the dog collar match do not, like, I don't like them, but it did not get to me in the same way that it seemed to have gotten to a lot of people. And even I know Dave was saying, like, his responses to the to Dominion were more favorable than the reaction he saw to it online, which I thought was interesting. I think so. I think a certain type of hardcore New Japan fan was obviously like completely disgusted by the show. That being said, you're not wrong on all of your other points about the direction of this company. And what I think is perfectly reasonable when you say, don't give it the attention, don't walk away. There has been a lot of doubts given to Gato that he's exceeded or overcome. If you look at the last, I think he what started booking it in 2009, so we might be about 16 years into this. Right? Remember the Okada return at the Tokyo Dome in 2012 was a dud. A few months later, everybody forgot about that. There were other duds like along the way, or at least things that started out as very shaky, like AJ Styles coming into New Japan, or Jay White when he debuted the Switchblade character. When he returned from his excursion. And then these things sort of like, oh my God, everything turned out so well. But Gedo has lost that ability to stick the landing even after a shaky takeoff or start. And I think that, yes, everybody talks about House of Torture, and it is absolutely one of the worst things I've seen in 26 years of watching Japanese wrestling. I cannot think of anything. Well, actually, I can think of a couple of things that I hate more. Like the whole Enokism era, but and to House of Tortures, I give him some credit. It's not quite business killing as Enokism was. So in that regard, that's kind of true. Like business is down, but business hasn't fallen out. I mean, they're completely collapsed. I think they're sort of gliding on their name brand as being the largest wrestling promotion in Japan and just had an incredible, whatever decade, 8 years from 2012 to 2020 of one of the greatest eras of professional wrestling ever. All good things have come to an end, and Ghetto can no longer overcome those shaky starts that he used to have. And I think even more damning to the company than House of Torture is this inability to get that next star, whether it is Yota Tsuji or Yuya Uemura or much has already been said about Shota Umino. I don't even have that much to say that hasn't already been said. Now, obviously, we could talk about Aaron Wolf and what the consequences of signing an Olympic judo gold medals is going to be for the company, and that's huge. But am I a little more under different circumstances, would I be more? And first of all, I'm not saying I'm not optimistic about Aaron Wolf. Someone with his pedigree usually excels, especially in Japanese pro wrestling. But anything can happen, and so I feel like the likelihood of this not succeeding is just that much higher because of what Ghetto's been doing these last couple of years, basically since the pandemic.
Yeah, like obviously Gedo is a Hall of Fame level booker. He's done some absolutely
Absolutely.
amazing things. But this is wrestling history, is that bookers overstay their welcome and they're rarely good for decades and decades and decades. You can point to some of the greatest bookers in wrestling history, Riki Choshu, Bill Watts, these guys that were great bookers at one point, they lose it at some points. And like the Okada, push. That's ancient history. The Okada push is like closer to like the turn. I think like it's probably pretty close, but it's like closer to the turn of the millennium.
It
We're about
is.
that same distance away from the turn of the millennium to today as we are to the Okada, decision. So, I kind of don't want to hear about that anymore. Obviously, it was a good decision, but like that's ancient history. The wrestling
Yeah.
landscape is completely different. Company's completely different. This House of Torture stuff. House Torture was founded in 2021. We're actually coming close on 4 years or 5 years of
No,
House of
I think
Torture.
it wasn't it not 2020 when Evil won the IWGP title, so we were
I
5
think, yeah, I
years
think like
from.
officially we're doing 2021, but you're right. It's been going
Okay.
on for technically longer than
The
that.
Evil push is what I would date it to, really.
Yeah, he wins the New Japan Cup in 2020. So we're like five, let's just say 5 years of House of Torture. It's the same thing every time. A lot of, running in, interference, Dick Togo, garrote wire, low bar. They all got like their own like little gimmicks. Like Dick Togo's got his garrote wire. The show's got like the push-up bar. Kanemaru has the whiskey bottle. Like they all got their little shitty gimmicks. They come in, they get heat by cheating, and then maybe sometimes the baby faces overcome it, but most of the time it's just like a lazy, boring match, and it happens every single time that these guys are in the ring, and it's been going on for years and years and years, and it happens in almost on almost every single show. And I can't believe it, honestly, Gerard. Like, if any other wrestling promotion was doing this, where it's the same thing every single time, week after week, show after show, year after year. I mean, imagine if like an American wrestling promotion was doing this, where they just had one stable that did the exact same thing every single time. I mean, Death Riders have only been around for like under a year, and people are like a few months in, were like losing their minds about how repetitive all their stuff was. And the House of Torture just is endless. It just goes on and on and on and on and on, and it never changes. And people will argue and they'll say, "Oh, well, they get good heat, and then when the babyface overcomes, it's a pop, and oh, they sell some merchandise." This shit sucks, and it sucked for such a long time, and it blows my mind that they can keep just doing this over and over and over again. And it's not like a business killer the way that like Enokiism was, because Enokiism was like this whole promotional philosophy of who they were going to put in the main event and things like that. House of Torture has been, for the most part, an undercard act. There's been times where it's weighted more into the main event, but it's mostly like a mid-card undercard act, feuding over tag titles and stuff like that. But it has just been the same thing over and over and over again. And also, it's also coming on the heels of, the Bullet Club, which was at the time kind of novel, that they were this villainous stable of foreigners doing a lot of interference. Like, but really the whole philosophy dates back even further, earlier than 2020 or 2021, before that evil push we've been seeing. That's one of Gato's grand ideas and grand philosophies, is just to have this, super shitter stable that has all these interference matches, and it never ever changes, and it's become so repetitive, and it leads to So much, you know, just all these wrestlers who maybe some of whom maybe could have had promising careers have just kind of had their, this is what they are. This is what Ren Narita is going to be. This is what Sho has become. This is what Sonata has become. Could these guys be doing more? I think so. But one of Gato's grand ideas is if he kind of gives up on somebody, he puts them as, you know, oh, you'll just be a shitty cheating heel. And the roster's full of these guys. And, you know, you talked about like, kind of the mixed reaction Dominion had, where some people who seemed more like the more hardcore, like watch every show, New Japan fans were more upset with Dominion than maybe some of the less hardcore fans. I'll tell you right now, the way I have watched New Japan over the last few years, I don't watch the shows live. I watch them afterwards, which, you know, obviously makes a lot more sense given I live where I live and the shows are on, you know, in the middle of the night. But, you know, for the, I don't know, last few years, unless it's an absolutely major must-see match, I see a House of Torture match and I press that arrow next match. I'm not watching that stuff. I watched when I first, the first time I watched Dominion, I did watch the dog collar match because that was like a big enough match for me to want to watch. I wish I didn't, but I was like, oh, this IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match with Doki and Sho as House of Torture, so that's a skip. And like, so I'm just picking out the stuff I watched. So like, I didn't hate Dominion. My experience watching Dominion, I didn't hate it as much as a lot of people because I'm like, I'm watching the tag title match. I'm watching the Oleg Bolton and Takeshita match. I'm watching, you know, a strong main event with Goto and Takagi. I'm watching the Gabe Kidd Yoda Tsuji match. Like, I was like, ah, that show wasn't that bad. But I also didn't watch outside of the dog collar match a lot of the dreck on that show. And so and that like, and that's like not good. Like for like. That I, as a fan of New Japan, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of sh matches on these cards that I just want to skip. I don't want to watch them because I know they're going to be bad, and I know they're going to make me mad, and I know they're going to be frustrating for me to watch. That's like not good. But that's just a reality of where I've come to watching the promotion, and I bet you a lot of people are in the same spot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just see there's been a steady decline. I think, I mean, obviously the very first Evil title reign turned off a lot of people, but yet some people kept going through, and it just seems every year over year, there's just that, you know, a slightly less noticeable, more amount of people that have, you could see that have turned off. And I think that it's in part like, if you think about, you know, when a booker loses their fastball, so to speak, Gedo always had repetitive beats to his booking. If you remember when, you know, Bad Luck Fale turned heel and debuted the Bad Luck Fall, it was like every spot show, even not just to the big shows, he would come out, how do the Bad Luck Fall, and then someone would get stretchered out. There was that one year when it was like Gorillas of Destiny and Fale, they would get themselves DQ'd in literally like almost every single G1 tournament match they had. I think that was in 2018 or 2019. And and so that's like all the Gedo thinks that repetition will somehow get something over, and I think that he has totally lost all sense of that. That simply is not the case. It doesn't work, especially in this case.
Yeah, and like I said, yeah, like, and you raised the good point where it's like, again, it's just the same idea over and over again. That's what I can't get over. Like, I know I've said it a few times, so now it's becoming ironic that I keep repeating that Gato's booking is repeating, but I honestly can't believe it. Like, like I tolerated it for a long time. Like, I tolerated it in New Japan way longer than I would have tolerated it in almost any other wrestling promotion. Just and part of it's like, you know, like I said, like the New Japan calendar is cyclical. You kind of just come to expect these things. New Japan, for as long as I've watched the company closely, which, you know, is right around the time of the formation of the Bullet Club, I have always been, so this is kind of something that I've always lived with New Japan. It's like, oh, they always got like one shitter heel stable that does a lot of interference. But we're just that's it just seems like they're stuck in time. And really, this dates back to, I think, you know, the pandemic and the either loss or kind of phasing down of some key talents. So the AEW is created in 2019. They lose Kenny Omega and they lose to a lesser extent like Chris Jericho and the Young Bucks. And then over time, they've slowly lost more talent. You had the pandemic, which wasn't helpful at all, obviously. Okada jumps to AEW. Tanahashi's phased down. You lose Nakamura even before 2019. So you're kind of left with Naito, and you elevate Ospreay, great, and then Ospreay leaves. So there's obviously been challenges. I don't want to dispute that there haven't been challenges, but ever since kind of the company needed to begin its next phase, and certainly like from 2021 on, there just hasn't been any cohesive, strong creative direction. It just seems like the company's been limping along with fewer and fewer star power, the same staples kind of being in the same spots. You kind of elevate some guys almost by default, like Zack Sabre Jr. or Goto this year. And the young guys don't get the kind of support or push that they needed to kind of seize the moment and effectively replace some of the star power. And we're left here in 2025 where you have none of those, key cornerstone stars really left. You've kind of got like this B team of veteran main eventers, which is like Goto and Zack and Shingo Takagi. And those guys are some of my favorite wrestlers ever. So I don't want to disparage them. But from a star power perspective, they are not Tanahashi, Okada, Naito. And you don't have really a lot of young guys that are poised to seize the moment. And it doesn't seem like there's any game plan or strategy to get them there. And there hasn't been for years. This is a problem for years, Gerard. It is not something that just emerged in 2025. It was something that we were talking about in 2020. And there just has, and Gato's been in charge this whole time, and there just hasn't been a game plan. And you look at what other wrestling companies over the same time period have done in terms of we got to try to get some new guys. We saw Pro Wrestling Noah was struggling for a long time, but we're starting to see they got Ozawa, they've got Team 2000, which again is a heel shitter staple, but it is at least relatively novel. And you have this exciting new charismatic young wrestler leading the charge. And you also, they worked hard with Kiyomiya and things like that. You look at what All Japan has done. Again, not something that I'm a huge fan of, like the Saito brothers, but you have the Saito brothers, you got Yuma Aoyagi over to a degree. You've got Yuma Anzai as this wonder kid kind of talent. You've got new stars in place, and you've got a new direction for the company that's not just the same old stuff over and over again. Look at what Dragon Gate has done, right? They've lost a lot of their top guys, similar to New Japan over a similar time period. What did they do? They found new guys. They got exciting young wrestlers. They got guys they trained. They put them in a position to succeed. It is not an impossible situation that New Japan has found itself in, and that any booker would really struggle to turn things around. And I'm not saying that Gato needs to hit the heights that he did in the 2010s. I don't think business is going to look the same. But I want to feel like this is a company that has a strong creative direction. And I don't think anyone could argue credibly that it does right now, outside of the same ideas that he's had for the last 15 years.
Well, I don't want to downplay the sort of extenuating circumstances that Ghetto and the company had to navigate, especially from, well, starting with the pandemic, but including from 2021 onwards when people got injured and started to leave, also leave. But, you mentioned Nakamura a little earlier. When he left in 2016 alongside AJ Styles and the Good Brothers, he the company did not miss a beat. Right? AJ Styles left, Kenny Omega becomes the top foreigner, and in fact becomes a bigger name than AJ Styles ever was in New Japan. And they did not miss Nakamura because he somehow Ghetto, I think Ghetto's booking of Nakamura and especially the Nakamura's sort of arc as like a guy that debuts with high expectations and then sort of doesn't meet them, but then eventually reinvents himself. Even like he's in after having been in the business, I think, I don't know, all like 8 or 9 years from his debut was when he comes up with that more modern Nakamura character, right? That was a unique thing that he slotted him in so well. But again, it's something that you could have pulled out of the New Japan pyramid, so to speak, and you don't miss a beat. And so the point is, Ghetto has weathered these sort of departures before. But when this starts to happen again, he is totally amiss. And again, it's just like everybody loses their fastball. Everything's declined. Now it doesn't shock me that there is other things like there's AEW, there's the pandemic, because obviously one of the things with the pandemic was a lot of the foreigners, they didn't want to come to Japan because of the 2 week quarantine that went on for quite some time, right? But it's just one thing after another, and that sort of wears you down, probably your booking sharpness. You have to make do, because, like, let's be honest here, under different circumstances, Hirooki Goto is not the IWGP champion right now, and it is almost a shame that he has, but also a credit to him, but also a shame that he has to be this placeholder at this sort of weird transitional moment, right? Get and it's sort of funny after all of this, you're beating him like a drum. The title matches, they're just like, I'm out of ideas. None of these young guys are working. Zack Sabre Jr. did not work, which actually kind of surprised me a bit that that didn't catch on, and I wonder how much of that is him just not being a tippy top guy versus Ghetto booking him poorly, because I think there were some very questionable booking decisions made by that during that title run that, again, Ghetto doesn't have the chops to do it. So he's not able to elevate people, and he's not helping the people that are ready to step up. Like, you could debate whether the new Three Musketeers are ready, but I think someone like Zack Sabre Jr. was ready to hold the top world title, but the booking failed him ultimately, and that's on Ghetto.
Yeah, obviously the pandemic was a huge challenge, and it was a bigger challenge for Japanese pro wrestling companies and New Japan Pro Wrestling in particular, than it was here in North America. And you talk about like it was a really difficult time to get foreigners in particular to come in. It really kind of changed like in terms of like the gaijin presence in Japan has never been the same post-pandemic. Now a lot of that ha happens to be AEW and WWE both being very aggressive in signing available talent, but it hasn't been the same in terms of you seeing the kind of volume of talent or promising young talents coming over, certainly not in New Japan. And so that is obviously an issue, but again, the pandemic wasn't last year. There has been, I think, enough. And again, this is part of the reason I think I've kind of given New Japan a pass was because the pandemic, we all kind of hand waved it in the pandemic. The impacts of the pandemic, lasted longer in Japan.
I
There was a
mean,
lot more
to be
strictness.
fair, you could not cheer until I think January 2023.
So it wasn't like it was like in America by the time it was like I feel like summer of 2021 things were like pretty much back to normal in terms of drawing crowds and things like that. I want to say it was Double or Nothing 2021 was AEW's like kind of they had the crowd the full
I
crowd
believe
in
so, yeah.
Jacksonville, and that was kind of like in my mind like the return of actual wrestling with crowds in the United States. And so again, I think that's one of the reasons I've been hesitant to kind of criticize him is understanding that obviously this was a huge challenge. But again, it's now been years since then. And there's been time to kind of rebuild and find things. And you just look at the company. I mean, I mentioned House of Torture earlier, but just look at the stables. Do we have like forever stables now in New Japan? Where these stables like Bullet Club and Chaos are going to be around forever, and just the names and faces are going to change, but it's almost going to be like they're sports franchises where the players change, but the franchises stay the same. And a lot of it just feels outdated and like relics from the past, especially when you don't have the star power in those same roles that you had when those stables were at their peak. And so like I would if I was Gato, there'd be a lot of changes that I would want to see, but like I'd almost just want to be like, we're disbanding all of our stables and we're starting with a fresh slate. We're gonna have maybe a few different stables, we're gonna have a feeling out process, we're gonna have just new colors, new merchandise, new stuff. Like it just you watch New Japan, it's like, man, this is like a company stuck in time, like dinosaurs enshrined in caves or something like that, where it's just like, oh yeah, it's chaos. Remember chaos? Like it's just not the same. And you even see like the Los Ingobernables and United Empire, like their leaders have left the company. And
They're
they're,
zombie factions.
yeah,
Yes,
they're literally
wild.
zombie factions. Like they're kind of exist. They don't really exist, but they do. And they're like, oh, are we gonna revamp it? Like when Finn Balor Prince Devitt left, they immediately replaced him with AJ Styles, and like AJ Styles is the new leader. Let's go. AJ Styles left Bullet Club and went to WWE. Kenny Omega stepped up. Kenny Omega's the new leader, that kind of thing. This is like they're like, man, we don't really know what we're gonna do with these stables, but we can't really get rid of these stables because we've invested, years of time in them. Certainly in Los Ingobernables has been a huge success in terms of merchandise, but it's like they literally are zombies. And again, I think that speaks to like the lack of willingness to do anything new or interesting is that they kept these stables around that really have no purpose anymore.
Now, to be fair, I mean, I have no idea, and this is just speculation, but it would not shock me if the Bushi Road marketing department is telling them, no, please do not stop using this intellectual property. It has made us a lot of money. That would not shock me either, though.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's obviously money, and especially in the Los Ingobernables. But if that is the case, and Naito leaves, like do something with the who's going to step up and be the new leader? Do something direct, like I mentioned with the when
Right.
they lost the leaders of the key players of the Bullet Club, they had somebody right there, and it was very good for those individual wrestlers' careers. It was great for AJ Styles. It was great for Kenny Omega. It was great for David Finlay. When they did those kind of big step ups, because was a way of elevating those guys into a higher status in terms of star power. That hasn't been the case with either United Empire, which for LIJ, totally, I can see that. I find it hard to believe that like
Yes.
somebody at Bushiroad is like, we gotta keep United Empire stuff around.
Yeah, definitely not in the case of that. I'll give you that.
And I think, a huge part of this story overall is the lack of urgency in terms of pushing these new wrestlers, and especially the younger guys, the was the Reiwa generation of talent. Probably
Yeah.
mispronounced that. But Yoda Tsuji, Shota Aminu, Ren Narita, I guess, is part of that.
Yeah, people always forget, but that's because of Ghetto's booking.
Yeah, because of Gedo's booking. I mean, yeah, he didn't seize the moment either, but it's
Look,
you
it's funny
have.
because I'll give some, so I'll have to, just because people don't pay enough attention to him and hand wave will find it up. But Ren Narita would have been better off just cosplaying as Shibata and eventually finding his own route than being stuffed into this heel faction. I'm
Yeah,
utterly
well,
convinced of
that's.
that.
That's part of my issue, which is like, I don't think Ren Narita was a bad wrestler at all. It wasn't like, oh, he's like, he wasn't like he was Yujiro, where it's just like, man, there's really not much you can do with this guy. In apparently he's employed for life. So let's just use him as like a bottom feeding heel that does a lot of interference spots and is in multi-man tag matches and things like that. Ren Narita was like, all right, we're gonna push this guy as like he's the son of Strong Style. We're gonna have a cosplay of a Shibata. It didn't work. I at the time said this isn't working. I think he's gonna try something else. But by what they did with him, which is what they do with a lot of people, which is like, you know what, you're just gonna be like a shitty heel. You're gonna have your push up bar. No, that's a wait, no, does Ren Narita have the push up bar? No, that's Yo. Or Sho has the push up bar.
Show.
Does Ren Narita have his own little whatever. He's a shitty heel, who's going to be in House of Torture, and it's like, all right, this is what your career is going to be because House of Torture is never going to go away, nor is its philosophy going to change. So this is your lot. In the next few years, you're just going to be a guy who has interference-laden matches that people skip over. And there was a path where Ren Narita's career was, not didn't go that way, where he was repackaged in a different way that was nice. And his career could take off because, like I say, it's not like he's a bad, incompetent wrestler where this is all he can do. But this is now, once his kind of initial kind of push didn't really take, they're like, all right, well, we're giving up. This is all you can do now. Bye.
Yeah, it's kind of sad in a lot of ways because, well, I mean, Narita is, I can't remember how old Narita was, but he was definitely at a younger phase in his career than what they when they initially turned Sho. I mean, him and Yo are getting up there in years, and I think they're a lot older than people think. And it's just like, well, especially with Sho, I mean, if you go back, I remember like 2019 Best of the Super Junior. Finals were Ospreay versus Shingo, but Sho was like just also like incredible talent. Everyone's like, this man is the future of the junior division. And then fast forward and look where he is now.
Yeah, do you remember the DDT match where it was Hiroshi Tanahashi and is it Yohei Komatsu
Yep.
versus I think it was Takeshita, who was 19 or something like that, and I think it was oh, what was his name? I can't remember. His DDT
Was it
guy.
Hiroshima?
No, it wasn't Hirashima. It was someone much worse than Hirashima. I'm trying to remember his name now. I literally remembered it while I was thinking, like, oh, I'm going to make this point when Gerard stops talking, and now I can't remember what his name is. That's a bad one. Anyway, classic DDT's Punch Tominaga guy. That's
Oh,
who I think of him as.
no, it was Hirashima and Ken Oka versus Hiroshima.
Oh, yes, it's Ken Oka. Yeah, you're right. It's not
Yeah.
Takeshita. It was Ken Oka. I like how you when I said DDT's version of Punch Tominaga, you immediately knew who I was talking about. It's a bad description of Ken Oka. But anyway, like Yo was there as a young lion, basically there to take the fall because Tanahashi's not taking the fall, and they wanted to put the DDT guys over. But it was like this great match, and I was like, "Whoa, Yo is going to be good." And the Sho and Yo tag team was a good junior heavyweight tag team. It got kind of repetitive because there's not a lot of changes to that division. There's never been an enormous amount of depth or anything like that. So once you're kind of
Yeah.
the top tag team, you're the top tag team forever. But
That's one of the other flaws that's always been in Ghetto's booking. I think the junior division generally has not been, I don't know if he's booking it or who's booking it, but I think the quality of the booking in that division has gone down and was going down a while ago before the problems. And the utter lack of attention to either of the tag team belts, given Ghetto's own history as a tag team wrestler. These are the sort of things that if you don't put invest in them at all times, they're not there for you to lean on in when times are tough. And I think that's really the case for in New Japan. There's no other divisions in the mid card that could help prop it up, even if things aren't so hot up top.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been a criticism of Gedo. I remember arguing with people like in like, 2016, 2017, when people were like, yeah, I don't think Gedo's that great of a booker. Look at what he's done with it. He doesn't book the tag team division well. He doesn't book the junior tag division well. And I'm like, what are you guys idiots? Gedo, who cares about those divisions? Like, I'm watching, Kenny Omega versus Okada. But obviously, as you said now, with when you don't have the kind of strength in the heavyweight division, that other the book, it's not like there's always been a tremendous creative effort put into those smaller divisions, and now you have that nothing to lean on when the heavyweight division is a little bit leaner. You mentioned like the effectiveness of like replacing Kenny Omega as soon as AJ Styles left, and kind of what that did. AJ Styles leaves in January of 2016. Do you know who wins the G1 in 2016, Gerard?
Kenny Omega.
Kenny Omega wins the G1 and he gets his big push. Kenny Omega didn't finish like in the middle of the pack in the G1. Kenny Omega, they didn't spend years trying to get Kenny Omega ready to be then take on the mantle. They had the opportunity. Kenny Omega's gonna replace AJ Styles and we're gonna push him to the moon. And I think that's a huge difference from a lot of these other younger guys who they've been afraid to pull the trigger on for whatever reasons. Now, granted, none of these guys have been as polished as Kenny Omega was in 2016 with his kind of with the kind of experience that Kenny Omega had. He's a generational talent, but they haven't had the same kind of urgency that they had in previous, incarnations when they needed to make a new star. And that has severely hurt it. It's hurt Aminu a ton. It's hurt Yoda Tsuji a ton. We'll see what happens with Gabe Kidd, who seems to be, it's like kind of, oh, now it's maybe Gabe Kidd's turn to grab the mantle. Who knows? I think what happens in this G1 will be really telling, who they decide to win this G1, because I think there's no obvious winner from a veteran's perspective. It's got to be one of those younger guys. Otherwise, what are we doing here? But I just don't know what they're going to do. But I think it's really hurt these more recent younger participants that really needed to be elevated and just haven't been there.
So there was a people would talk maybe a year or two ago, and they would look at, we'll just call them the Reiwa Three Musketeers. But when I say that, I could also encompass the Red Naritas and the Ryohei Ogiwas, that generation, so to speak. A year within the last year or two ago, people would be like, oh, well, Geto's got a plan. Geto's got a plan. And no, I don't think Geto ever had a plan. I don't think that the Umino bombing, well, first of all, Umino bombing should not have affected the others, which makes me think that he did not really have much of a plan for the others. And, and it just is way more, it just sticks out even more because of what Noah did with Ozawa. Ozawa was a rookie. He had never won a match. He goes off on his excursion. They bring him back. They immediately put him in the main event, have him beat Kaito Kiyomiya for the title in the Nippon Budokan on January 1st on their biggest show of the year. A star was born. Business immediately spikes. Now, I could tell you, I have many not nice things to say about Team 2000X, but I still voted for Ozawa as my number one on my 30 under 30 ballot because I just think the world of what he can be and what he has proven to be for business. And sometimes, no matter how meticulous you want to plan, because it's clear that Geto has these plans and he moves them around. Like, look at the David Finley push. You knew that that was something that he had always planned, and then you get to a certain date and he moves up David Finley because people talked about, oh, Sonata is going to get pushed, and some people I think gave up on Sonata getting ever pushed, and then Sonata get pushed. Now, was that a good idea in hindsight? Well, probably not, but it's just like he has had these longer term plans in the past, but it just seemed completely lacking, and if so, it is very poorly planned out in comparison with his past long-term plans that paid off. Sometimes in wrestling, yes, you want to build things long term so they can be sustained over the long term, but sometimes you just have to pull that trigger immediately, and that's what the situation and the timing calls for, and Geto failed to do that.
Yeah, on my last show when I had Alan Forel on and we were talking about, various developmental patterns for young wrestlers across the wrestling world, and Alan said the young lion period in New Japan lasts a really long time. It probably lasts way too long, especially given the urgency of which new talent is needed in the promotion. And I think in general, like New Japan moves at a very gradual pace. And you mentioned that with like the David Finlay push, and we've seen a lot of wrestlers spend kind of years and years on the roster, slowly making their way up, and then Gedo elevates them, and everything comes together nicely, and you feel good about it. But there's also time for urgency that's really required. I mean, you mentioned Ozawa. I mean, who did Ozawa beat? He beat Kaito Kiyomiya, which felt like a really definitive win because Kiyomiya himself had been elevated over the last few years as like the top guy in Noah at himself. So you not only had you not only did you have Ozawa kind of elevated, you used a guy, you needed to have a guy to elevate Ozawa, which you only had because you had elevated Kiyomiya a few years earlier. And with this New Japan's like these guys, like I have been watching Yoda Tsuji. When did he make his debut? Like 2018?
17 or 18. Like these guys are all like it's like let me put it this way. Go and look at guys like Ozawa, Kaito Kiyomiya, Yuma Aoyagi, Yuma Anzai. All of these
Yeah.
guys are still going to be on the 30 under 30 for a couple more years or just about to age out. Yuma Aoyagi won the Triple Crown for the first time in 2023, and he just aged out or will maybe get one more year in as eligibility under 30. Yuma Anzai is only 26. Ozawa is only 26 or 27. Kiyomiya, 27 or 28, right? These guys have already been at the top, elevated, and they still are not even 30 yet. But that's not the case
Yeah.
with Rewa, Three
Like,
Musketeer guys.
yeah, like, so Tsuji's 31, but Tsuji made his debut in 2018. I've been watching this guy for 7 years. And it's like, I'm still waiting for him to be elevated to like this higher level at the top where I'm a big Tsuji fan. If he, out of those, the three guys, he's definitely the guy I would put choose to push. I think he's charismatic. I think he can have really exciting matches. He's maybe lacking a little bit here and there. He's not the world's greatest prospect, but I think he's my guy in terms of that grouping. And I'm just like waiting for him to be elevated. And it's been years and years, and it's been such a slow burn where he had his young lion period, and then he had the pandemic, which delayed things. Then he went on an excursion, and then he came back, and then it seemed like they were really going to push him right away, right? He comes back and he gets that great debut, and he gets that, that huge match, and he joins LIJ, and he it's like, oh my God, Tsuji's gonna be like the next big star. They're going all the way with him, and that was in what, 2023? So it's like that was almost, that's over 2 years ago now, and we're still kind of waiting for him to get elevated to that level. And it's not like New Japan is bursting at the seams with super exciting talent, and he just can't quite get, break into that spot. It's been a deliberate choice to be so gradual with him, and I think they've lost it. I thought they lost it with Umino. Like, I know a lot of people have problems with Umino in terms of just them not thinking he's any good. I've always been a little bit higher on Umino, but I think the way they went with Umino being so gradual with him, just it waited longer and longer for people to kind of sour on him, to people kind of settle in and being like, I don't know if I really like this guy. This guy doesn't really pop off the page to me. And it's like, I think if they went super hard and pushed Umino as a world champion like 2 or 3 years ago, I think I don't know if it would have been like way better and he'd be a huge star today, but I don't think it would have been any worse than the route they went with, which is they basically waited for him to basically get stale as a babyface and then give him the Tokyo Dome main event. And of course, he doesn't have a good performance there, and now you're looking at him, he's seems like he's probably destined to be another shitty heel one day. But again, it was, I think, the gradual nature of the way New Japan uses these guys. It also makes you less excited for these prospects. And just as a fan, like, you might like what, seeing a young lion, but you're also like, okay, in 5 years, this guy might get a serious push. Like, that's forever in pro wrestling. Like, you watch a young lion now, and you're like, oh, that guy looks like he has potential. Be like, oh, maybe in 2030, he can win the G1. And it's like, that just seems, it's hard to get that emotional investment in these guys because it just feels like they're still years and years and years away as we're still waiting on these guys to seize it.
I mean, it's fascinating to watch this crop flail a bit. I don't want to completely write them off, so I don't want to use language that's too harsh on them. And I agree with you with Umino. I think there's just a lot of things working against him, and I don't think it's necessarily like a bad wrestler at all. And he's been in some pretty good matches. But I mean, I suppose the one thing that New Japan does have going for them, and maybe we can say some nice things about them, is that they are still turning out consistently. Their dojo is still turning out talent, still turning out talent. And as far as I know, that is still a good dojo. You've got Yuji Nagata in there, who's helped turn out so much great talent. So that's still a very strong fundamental thing that they have, that maybe every company has lost dojo generations, I might I add, because people get in, like, will get injured young. And then that will, like, sort of play, they'll be injury plagued, or it doesn't work out for personal reasons or something like that. But they just keep turning them out the same sort of way with Dragon Gate. They're probably, New Japan and Dragon Gate are probably the most prolific dojo, in terms of graduating them. And I think that's a strong suit that's going to help you in these tough times. But sometimes you get a little worried about it if they don't know exactly what to do with those wrestlers. Yeah, I mean, that's to me like the one fundamental that New Japan will have always going for them.
Yeah, I was thinking about Ruohei Oiwa,
Well, see,
who.
that's funny because I made a note and I'm like, in my notes for this, because some topics I want to talk about is like, is Oiwa even a ghetto guy? And I don't know if he is.
So Oiwa, who a lot of people are high on, he made the Voice of Wrestling 30 Under 30 list. And me and Alan talked about this. Like, if you look at like the write-ups for people who would have Oiwa, a lot of them were like, Oiwa's really on here because of the work he did in Noah, because he went on excursion and he was, given a pretty substantial position in Noah. He wasn't pushed to the moon, but he was
He was
presented.
Kaito Kiyomiya's tag team partner.
Yeah, I mean, he was presented stronger in Noah than he has ever been presented in New Japan, which is just so odd for a lot of reasons. And it's like, now he is like, okay, he's another guy who's, a promising young wrestler. He's about to cross the 4 year mark of his career, and it's like, it still just feels like he hasn't even, like, he got put in TMDK, and it's like, has he gotten any creative direction? Has he done anything this year really of note at all in New Japan? The answer is really no. And I mean, he's maybe going to make the G1. He still needs to
I
get
hope
past Satoshi
so.
Kojima. Now, so they brought Fale back at Dominion, and Fale was seemed like he was gonna get like a renewed push.
Yeah.
And so
Terrifying everyone.
it was supposed to be Fale versus Oiwa for this final spot in the G1, these qualifiers that they're having. And then Fale looks like he had a death in the family. It looks like he's gonna be missing some time. I do wonder if they wanted to have Fale in the G1, because it seemed like he was gonna get a big push, or at least a renewed push to some degree. As after doing this turn and being in House of Torture. And so I do wonder if they would have had Fale beat Oiwa. It might be actually to
Well,
Oiwa's benefit that Fale, unfortunately for Fale, obviously with the death in the family, is gonna miss the tour.
yeah, I don't think Kojima's getting in the G1 because he's got other commitments globally, shall we say.
Hey, this
I mean,
G1 field could use some Satoshi Kojima.
oh, absolutely. I thought though. One thing I did think is, like, given all the circumstances, Oiwa might have just won by disqualification against Fale. And that's how they sort of get him in there without Fale taking
That
the
would have,
loss.
yeah, that would have got Oiwa over. That's what you want to do, right? When you're trying to get this
I
young guy
know,
over.
but this is also keeping in with the current booking of Halton Torture, though.
Yeah, I think that's probably a decent guess that is what would have happened. But he's another guy where it's like, and we talk about this, like, again, New Japan has faced challenges, but these other Puro promotions have faced the same exact challenges, and they've also do not have the resources that New Japan has
Exactly.
had, and do not have like the not even resources, but like the fan sentiment, like the benefit of the doubt that New Japan has had. And yet they've somehow been able to do it. Now, part of that is it's, I guess, like, I don't want to say it's easier to get younger talent over, but if you're like a Dragon Gate, for example, and your fans are kind of used to seeing this really heavy churn and these young guys get elevated pretty quickly, and there's maybe not as much pressure from, being corporately owned like Bushiroad to hit attendance numbers and things like that. So there's a little bit more, when you're a little bit of a smaller promotion, there's a little bit more freedom to experiment in a way that maybe New Japan doesn't have. But all of these promotions have somehow been able to, elevate, find new people. I mean, you might be better suited to talk about this than me, but I know that, Stardom, which is also owned by Bushiroad, has dealt with kind of a similar thing where they have lost a lot of their key talent that they've been built around. They had the whole split with some of their key talent going to Marigold. They've lost talent to both WWE and AEW, and yet they've been able to find young talent, train the young talent, and quickly elevate them. And it's something that's just really eluded New Japan.
So it's funny you bring up Stardom because I do see a bit of, well, obviously they're both owned by Bushiroad, but what I sort of see happening to both companies is how shall I put this? And because I don't want to come across as negative, I'm not quite as high on Stardom as a lot of other people are right now. That's not to say I think they're bad or anything. No, they are a very good wrestling company. But what I see that has happened, especially you lose Tam Nakano and Mayu Iwatani. What you have done though is you've sort of maintained your momentum, but it's because you have built the brand of Stardom. Much like New Japan, attendance has not fallen off a cliff because you are New Japan. You are the king of sports. You are for the past 53 years, you've spent most of those as Japan's most successful and largest wrestling company, and at times the number two wrestling company on the entire planet. So, but I do still believe that that professional wrestling, with the possible exception of WWE and what it's become, is still a star-driven business. And I think you can only get so far being the brand of New Japan or being the brand of Stardom, at some point you are going to have to find new stars. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but that's what I still believe, especially in the Japanese context.
Well, you've certainly seen it. You've seen some of the houses with Goto as champion have gone into decline since Naito left. And Naito's obviously was easily, their biggest star.
Well, the one thing about Naito leaving, yes, it's going to hurt attendance, especially in your smaller spots, just the people in the small towns. They want to see Tetsuya Naito, one of the big stars ever in history of Japanese wrestling. But what doesn't make sense, or what doesn't add to this argument that Gedo is facing these external problems, is Naito was already being cycled downwards because, the condition that his body is in and the kind of performance he should get on. So yes, Naito's a hit to business, but the downsizing of Naito had already clearly been baked into the booking plans, and even then, Gedo did not have someone to come up and replace Naito as like one of the top stars of the company, right?
And Naito was really kind of like the last man standing in terms of like the huge drawing cards that was working main events. Because Tanahashi's still
Yeah.
around. This is a retirement tour, but Tanahashi had been phased down years ago,
Yeah.
away from the main event. And like Naito, like really, last year was just really running on fumes from an in-ring perspective, just working those main events, and doing the New Japan main event style and trying to work at the level that people have become accustomed to. And the reason that New Japan has become so popular, and especially to Western fans, is that really high in-ring quality. And
Yes.
just it's tough when your body is the way it is.
Well, I mean, that's some of the reasons why I could not handle rationalizations for what New Japan's direction was. It had set itself apart because of this quality in ring, and any deviation from that, I think, was always going to, at least among the international fan base, was always going to hurt them, no matter what kind of gimmick or character you came up with to replace. You were never going to find a replacement for just high quality, in fact, the highest quality of professional wrestling on the planet.
Yeah, and definitely as they've lost some key talent and some talents aged out, the quality is still really high in certain ways, but it's not
Yes.
even close to what it was, even like 2 or 3 years ago, let alone, 8 or 9 years ago. And I think a lot of the things were like when this G1 field came out, and a lot of people were like, ooh, this is the G1 field, and it's basically just the regular roster, no, talent coming in from other promotions that we've seen in the last few years. And it's like, oh man, you look at these G1s, like, man, I'm not excited about a lot of these matches. And it's like, this is kind of what the roster is. And it's not filled, with just a bunch of killer great workers anymore.
I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and much has been said about sort of a malaise across Japanese wrestling in general, which I agree there's a bit of one. I don't think these are insurmountable odds. I don't even think these are insurmountable odds for New Japan, obviously, got Aaron Wolf coming in. But what I think has happened, and I think this is undeniable, and I'm sure some people will get angry when I say this, is that the attraction of Japanese professional wrestling was there was the Japanese wrestling advantage. It was always somehow going to be generally the best professional wrestling from an in-ring quality on the planet. We saw a lot of years of whatever the hell was going on in the United States and North America. Mexico was on and off. Mexico, at least for CMLL, up again. But Japan, I will say, for the past couple of years, is no longer putting out the best professional wrestling on the planet. That does not mean there's no match of the year candidates coming from Japan or anything like that, but I just don't think that that guarantee that Japan is going to have the best in-ring matches by far of any other country on the planet has been the case, or has been the case for the past couple of years. And I think that's really the first time that I can remember, because even when you had some sort of darker eras of Japanese wrestling in, I don't know, like 2005 to 2010, those weren't always great years. With again, there's always exceptions, right? But those weren't necessarily always great years in the United States. Yes, you had Ring of Honor, and then a little later on, PWG, sure, but WWE, not good. No other competition. Mexico ebbs and flows, right? I mean, some very lean years for CMLL just a couple of years ago before it picked up again. And then AAA has been whatever AAA has going on a while now. But to me, it just seems that who's really fallen the most is Japan, and that Japanese advantage is no longer there.
Well, you're touching on what I think has been is a really like fundamental root of why Japanese wrestling has become why it became popular outside of Japan.
Yes.
And I would say that whenever I explain to somebody who maybe doesn't watch professional wrestling at all, like, oh, like you're why are you watching, Japanese pro wrestling? Like, why what's the appeal to that? And I would always say, like, oh, the matches are way better, but that's not really a way to define it to somebody who doesn't really understand pro wrestling. But
Right.
I would, what my de facto response would be, they take professional wrestling a lot more serious there. It's
That's
like
a great way of
treated
putting it.
like it's a serious sport, and that this is, a real fierce athletic competition that's not watered down with like these over the top characters and storylines and Vince Russo bullshit. And when you have House of Torture and you have these storylines and all this interference and all this bullshit, it's hard to distinguish that from a lot of American pro wrestling these days. There's not that much to distinguish, at least with New Japan. It isn't a company that takes professional wrestling super duper seriously. And I think that is where you're seeing, like, when you're talking about like, the Japanese advantage, I would describe it as being it's treated more like a real sport. That's not the way New Japan seems to have been booked for a long time now.
No.
And, again, a lot of these problems with Gato, like relying a lot on heel interference and stables taking sticking around for a long time and neglecting the tag team division and neglecting the junior division in some ways, that's all existed for a long time. And in a lot of ways, it's been glossed over by just having superior talents and really taking advantage of being the top dog in Japanese pro wrestling and also taking advantage of the fact that American pro wrestling was really undervaluing some really key talents. So that a guy like Kenny Omega, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world, is available and easy to kind of bring in to your company. Or AJ Styles, WWE didn't want to sign AJ Styles. They didn't think he was worth it when he was, left TNA. So he went to New Japan almost as by default. So they had a lot of things going for them. That advantage is gone with the creation of AEW in a lot of ways. And what you're seeing is just it, you're right about like I still really enjoy some of the high-end matches in New Japan, but the average match in New Japan on a new, even a big show, and I think Dominion was a perfect example of this, has really declined.
Yeah, the undercards are not as strong as they once were. Some of that was always going to happen, especially if you weren't going to do use new stars. I mean, if you go back, I don't know, 2016, 2017, even Okada was busting his ass in six-man tags in the mid-card. Of course, that wasn't going to last forever. Tom was going to come catch up with him and to the point where he was like, well, I could still have an incredible main event, but I got to conserve myself when I'm in Beppu or Fukuoka or some mid-size or smaller city or something like that. That wasn't going to last forever, but that just happened to be when they were peaking. And in the mid 2010s to mid to late 2010s, everybody was still like in great shape and really willing to put in a huge amount of effort even on small shows. And I think you notice those things, right? It's like it's an entire vibe, right? Like when a wrestling company is hitting on all cylinders, it's a vibe. Like from the matches to who comes out next to challenge at the end of a big show to be the next challenger, all of these things just add to the atmosphere and the memories. And when one of those things starts to sort of decay and fall apart, it just adds to the malaise when a company gets in a malaise and it gets into a rut. And these things are not insurmountable. I mean, companies smaller than New Japan have gotten out of it, but it's just you can look at all of these things and just watch like a spot show in front of like 700, 800 people from 2025 versus 2018 in New Japan, and I think you'll really see like what's I haven't done that, but I should. And I think you would really see what's sort of ailing the company in a lot of ways.
It's been a problem over the last few years. Now, some of that has been taken off of their hands, but there was a real problem with like dead weight in the promotion. Like the Gorillas of Destiny, those guys are dead weight. Fale, who is now unfortunately back, is dead weight. Chase Owens is kind of dead weight. Even guys that I kind of like Yoshihashi, right? He's not moving the needle anymore. And you look at this G1 that's coming up, and it's like even guys who I enjoy that I don't think are bad wrestlers, but just like, well, they haven't really done anything for of significance for a long time in New Japan, and it just kind of feels like they're spinning their wheels. Like El Phantasmo is a good guy, is a good example. I like El Phantasmo. I think he's a very talented individual, has had some matches that I've enjoyed tremendously. It's hard to get a lot of excitement going for El Phantasmo 2025 G1 because he's been slotted in a certain way. He's been on my television screen for a long time now. Nothing has really changed all that much about him. He has character hasn't evolved all that much. He's just not an exciting individual that makes me want to get excited about watching his matches, despite the fact that he's a pretty good pro wrestler. And I think there's just a number of guys like that. And there's other guys that just kind of have never put it together. Like a guy that I find really intriguing is Okan, who I have always had this kind of hot and cold relationship with him, where like I was really excited with when he was a young lion, and then I didn't really like his character during his excursion, and then when he came back and it was clear he was going to be heavy heel shtick, and then at times he's broken out of that character and he's been exciting, and I'm like, okay, here's like the cool ass kicking native Japanese wrestler, it's going to be like really exciting. And then but he just seems like he's gotten lazy and he's reverted to this being his state. And he's now like kind of one of those dead weight guys where it's like, oh, that big Okan push probably is never going to happen. He hasn't seized any opportunity that's been presented to him to justify it. And also, Gato doesn't really seem like he's ever going to elevate any of these guys. And it's like, okay, am I excited for Okan in this B block? Am I going to get excited for this like great Okan Shota Umino match that might be on one of these shows? Like, probably not. And I just think there's a lot of guys right now on the roster that are like that.
Yeah, Okan's a fascinating case because, I think people had expected he seemed to be a sort of management favorite at one point, and I just think the gimmick just really ended up hurting him in the long term. The Mongolian thing, I don't know. He does like at times have like he has had great matches, but not enough. He's also shown like great charisma at times, but I just don't think it's all there. And for despite the fact that
He's
I thought
gotten
that,
very comp he himself has gotten very complacent. I think
yeah.
the talent is there, but that consistency is not. And I think a lot of it comes down to him being knowing that coming being introduced, working a gimmick, right? He gets
Wow.
introduced to back into New Japan Pro Wrestling after being a young lion, and he is a gimmick where he's not going to do a lot of cool moves. He's going to be doing, the Mongolian chops. He's going to be doing like a few of these, mock poses and things like that, but he was never even really given a chance, I think, to just be, Tomoyuki Yuka, big hoss amateur wrestler that's going to give people belly to belly suplexes, which is what I thought he was going to be when he was a young
Yep.
lion. Never even given that opportunity. He's slotted in as this gimmick, and he's kind of learned over time, like, this is all I gotta really do. Okay, that's what I'm gonna do. And it's been very disappointing because I think he has the talent to be great.
Same similar thing with Sho. The game, well, I mean, he started off very promising, even more promising than Okan in a lot of ways. Got saddled with the gimmick. Although the bad gimmicks are there, but they're not as I would say severe as what's hurting the company as just not pushing some of the other young talent more properly, right? That to me is a bigger thing than just some bad gimmicks.
Yeah, I mean, I think like with the instance for Okan, it's like so with Sho and Yo, like You know, they come back. Sho comes back from excursion. He's paired with Yo, junior heavyweight, you know, tag team, and they have a good run where they have exciting matches. You know, the tag team gets stale and they do the split, and then things kind of fall off the rails for both of them. But at least
They're
they were
both Marty
given,
Jannetty.
yeah, the two Martys. The issue, and like with Okan though, he didn't even get, I think, a real chance to be the kind of killer he need to be, because Gato came up with this idea, assuming Gato came up with the idea for him to be this, you know, do the Mongolian gimmick, the Killer Khan, you know, Killer Khan 2.0 kind of gimmick. And he's was never really given a chance to be like just a like, I don't know, just like a regular wrestler, but like just like a standard New Japan guy. Instead, he's always been this gimmick, and he's been mostly tag team work, and there's been flashes that are there. But at the end of the day, I think he's just, you know, this guy who understands, you know, I'm doing this gimmick, and that's what's going to keep me a job for a long time, and that's what he's going to do. And he's not motivated to do anything better, and the booking hasn't given him any motivation to get better.
No, I mean, and it's a shame. You run into these cases. I mean, I think they happen less in Japan than they do maybe in other countries, but they're still there, and it's still sort of sad to see. And I really got over Okan a while ago, even though there were people thinking that, oh, maybe just around the corner, the push is going to happen and that sort of thing. But that was something that I gave up at quite some time ago, despite the fact that people were really convinced that he was going to get a huge push. But I just felt like that ship had sailed a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting on it, and he's, you know, joined a list of guys who were maybe going to get a huge push one day. But I think even the most optimistic Okan fans have kind of have come to grips with the fact that this is what he is. He's going to get, you know, 6 or 8 points in the G1. He might have like one like pretty like, you know, 4.25-star match where people are like, Okan, yeah, remember, he's still capable of this, but he's just not there. And that's just another guy who I think on paper as a homegrown talent who's should be in his prime right this second, just hasn't worked out for him in that way.
Yeah, I mean, especially with his pedigree, I expected more. But in some ways, when did Okan return? Was it 2018, 2019? Or was it later than that?
Yeah, no, it's before the pandemic, I think.
If it's before, yeah, so it's funny because I think maybe Okan is sort of the canary in the coal mine.
He comes
In
back on
some.
October 16th, 2020. So it was during the pandemic.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. For some reason, I thought he was back before then.
And
But I think.
he'd been doing the Great Okan gimmick since June 30th, 2018, when he was working in the UK Indies. So he's did that gimmick for a really long time before he came back.
Yeah, that's funny. But I will still stand by my canary in the coal mine comment because, yes, people were down in about New Japan at that time because of the evil title reign, or starting to anyway. But, you know, Akan is the big first return, even in the pandemic era. He, in some ways, his fizzling should have set off more alarm bells for what's going to happen to Tsuji and Umura and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those guys have been. I mean, there definitely is. They haven't didn't go quite as far with some of these guys, though. It looked like for Tsuji for a second, he was going to be really like he was going to be like a wrestling dinosaur almost at some point. But they do are kind of in this phase where like we bring our young lions back who have been on excursion for a while and, you know, have been around wrestling for years and years now, and we give them kind of like a wacky gimmick. And then they show up, and like they gotta kind of overcome that wacky gimmick or that wacky packaging, and it hasn't worked for really any of them.
No, I mean, they tr remember like Umino was the classic like, oh, the kids love him type thing, and that just totally bombed. I think it's less severe with Umura and Tsuji though. They're more like their personas are extensions of themselves as opposed to trying to be too hard to either, you know, do a silly gimmick or be someone that they're really not. I mean, I would say that I still have. I'm never like a doomer generally, unless things get really bad and they'd have to be a lot, actually, in fact, to be a lot worse than they are. So I still have a certain amount of hope in Tsuji and in Uemura. And I think, like, sometimes looking back over, wrestling history in Japan and even New Japan's own history, one of the interesting things is like, okay, so Enokiism falls apart, the company's on death's door. What happens? Well, they bring Riki Choshu back to do booking at this in late 05 or 06. And so he books for a couple of years before they give it to Gedo. And of course, at the end of the 90s and the beginning of 2000s, Choshu's booking had run out of a lot of steam. And when I started watching Pearl, that was a big topic of debate because, people were feeling that Choshu's booking was beginning to really suffer after the fact that he had successfully elevated the Three Musketeers in the early 90s. So, I'm actually saying that maybe Gedo could be pulled and returned to booking one day down the line after several years of not booking. But just sort of the thing is, you got to sort of go back to. But what Choshu did to stabilize New Japan was just meat and potatoes, basic, simple professional wrestling. But he also had Tanahashi, obviously, coming up at that time, a once in a generational talent, to be fair. But, if I were booking, I would just do something chalk like, Tsuji wins the G1 and beats Goto in the Tokyo Dome, and you just have to run with that and get him up there, right? Nothing flashy, nothing fancy, just do what's the most logical next step.
And it's okay if Tsuji doesn't sell out the Tokyo Dome in his first Tokyo
Exactly.
Dome main event.
Because I don't think he's going to be sort of get sort of the same toxic reactions that to God.
What if instead of Naito, like just kind of leaving the company on his retirement tour, Tsuji turned on Naito and like beat the shit out of him and took over as the leader of LIJ as a heel? And then you like put the world title on him, have him beat the shit out of Goto and win the world title.
That works. I have no problem with that.
Like that would be it would that would a keep the LIJ branding, which is important apparently for New Japan, but also like you really do something with a promising young wrestler, which is like okay, this is the time for Tsuji to go all we're gonna go all the way hard with him. And instead, they kind of go 50% with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, my only concern with that is that Naito is such a beloved character that I'm not sure that not doing some sort of resolution to that turn would necessarily be a good idea.
Well, a lot of people think Naito is gonna. He hasn't wrestled his last match in New Japan,
Yeah, no,
is a common belief.
I could totally believe
I'm
that,
just
but you
tossing
know.
that out as like an idea of like, okay, that is an example of what I would consider to be like a really aggressive booking
Oh,
measure to try to
absolutely.
ele create a new talent as opposed to whatever they're gonna do now. I mean,
Well,
the G1 is fascinating in the sense of I really don't know who's going to win it. And it'll be really kind of interesting to see who they decide is going to win it. And if that they have the confidence in that person to go in as the Tokyo Dome main event, because does it seem like Goto is, now that he's made it to the G1 as champion, that like Goto is gonna just hold the title all the way until Wrestle Kingdom and he's gonna main event Wrestle Kingdom, which is extremely unlikely when, like last year, if you were to tell me next year Hirooki Goto is the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, but it seems like it's a distinct possibility right now.
I think at this point you just sort of do it. I mean, have they said that they're going to do the title match for the G1 winner at Wrestle Kingdom?
They haven't, and obviously they set the precedent last year where that's not going to be a thing. But that, I mean, my expectation would be that the winner of the G1 is going to wrestle at the Tokyo Dome. That obviously doesn't have to happen, but I mean, usually when the champion, who the person who's the champion in the G1 climax usually tends to hold on to that title until the Tokyo Dome. They'll lose a couple times in the G1 to set up matches for the fall for title defenses in the fall, and then they'll be. But it's usually the title is on, I don't know, like a more established drawing card than Goto. So, but who
It's
would you
fine.
put in right now? But who would you put in it right now? Like you look at the roster, like okay, you do also have it's going to be Tanahashi retirement. So that's probably going to be the big attraction on the dome
Yep.
anyway. So you don't necessarily need to have the biggest match. But like right now, if you were like, okay, looking at the landscape of New Japan, who would you main event the Tokyo Dome with? And it's like Goto is, he's the world champion. He's had the best year out of a lot of guys in New Japan. So he kind of is that guy. It's, I love Goto. I'm really enjoying the run that he's had this year. He would be placing very highly on my wrestler of the year ballot if we were handing them in today. But he is not a guy that you're really, I think, excited about to have as the headlining act at the at Wrestle Kingdom.
There's nobody else, though. That's the thing. And it's funny because I've never been particularly wedded or enjoyed the whole once they started doing the G1 winner gets the title shot in the Tokyo Dome. I thought that was too convoluted, too much space in between the title shot.
Yeah.
But under the current circumstances, I would just go for it because you gotta just pick your guy, and I would just do Tsuji wins and then faces go to on January 4th. In the Tokyo Dome, and that's just what you do. Just stay the course, have your established veteran in Goto put over the young guy to win the IWGP World Title for the first time, and just go from there.
Obviously, like the role that AEW and to a lesser extent WWE, but clearly AEW is the company that is most likely to sign away some of your promising talent or really any of your talent. And that's something that New Japan has kind of had to grapple with. Obviously, they lost Will Ospreay and Okada being the two most significant departures. And now you even see like the tone a lot of fans had about Gabe Kidd drastically changed when he started appearing on Dynamite a little bit more regularly. All of a sudden, people are saying, well, Gabe Kidd's the next foreigner to leave. And that is something that New Japan is going to have to grapple with, which is the kind of odd relationship where they have a working relationship with New Japan. New Japan, AEW has, you know, they do the joint show every year, which is a huge success. They, you know, did a second Tokyo Dome show this year, which was a success. They've got some, obviously, some key talent, like wrestlers like Kenny Omega, who are huge drawing cards for you, and you can use them on some of your shows for big shows. So there's benefits to it, but there's also this kind of, you know, elephant in the room is that, especially when it comes to your foreign talent, they're going to go to AEW or they're going to go to WWE. That's just a reality. Like, it's Gabe Kidd will not be wrestling for New Japan Wrestling full time in 5 years. I'm like pretty confident about that. And I'm also feel the same way about like a guy like Callum Newman.
You're probably right. Although, whenever I approach these things, I like to look at historical perspective. Foreigners have always come and gone.
Yep.
Foreigners have always used to jump between companies in Japan often, and they still sort of do to a certain extent. People like Francesco Akira, you know, started in All Japan. So I don't put too much worry about that. But there's also guys like Zack Sabre Jr. and I would say Chris Brooks and DDT. Those guys just love being wrestlers in Japan, and they're not going to leave. Like I don't think maybe Zach will leave at some point when he's like 40 or something, but I don't think he's on the cusp of leaving. There's guys like that that come along every so often. You
Yeah, I
mentioned
mean,
Shane.
yeah, each guy is interesting. I think in terms of Gabe Kidd, who's a young guy who a lot of people feel like has real superstar potential, is someone that people are going to wave a lot of money in front of,
For
that it
sure.
becomes hard to turn them down.
For sure, I don't want to deny that this is an issue, but I have always taken this approach that you cannot let, like, we have been through this, we've talked about this many times in the Emerald Floatshow, because both All Japan and Noah over the past couple of years have had their brushes with, like, WWE, and we, and some people really do about that sort of thing, and we're like, no, it's not going to happen. They're not going to destroy Japanese professional wrestling. And I don't think that AEW signing away a lot of New Japan talent is going to destroy New Japan, especially if you're smart about that, especially if you're cultivating talent. Not everyone is going to be like an Okada who could have like the crossover appeal in North America or other places globally. So I think there's that one thing you have going for you. So to me, it's something that, yeah, it's there, but cannot let it consume you and how you think about Japanese wrestling. That being said, look, you don't have to push foreigners. The thing is, Japanese wrestling has always been so dependent on foreigners to a certain extent. Some companies have been more dependent on them at times. I don't think there is a company that has relied, there was a large gap of years and years and years where, in the 80s, yes, New Japan, All Japan, both very reliant on your foreigners, Dan Hansen, Bruiser Brody. They were main eventers, they were champions. And then it sort of goes into this lull. And then New Japan, again, once it gets bigger, it becomes actually quite reliant on foreigners. And that's a big part of Gedo's booking. So, I mean, you could also just rely less on foreign talent. That's also an option, too. Even though you've had some of the greatest wrestlers of all time pass through as foreign talent in New Japan in the last decade, I get that. But it is a choice. You do not have to do that. And maybe you just have to sort of take that into account and just don't rely on, be like, I'm going to take this guy, even if he's a foreigner, and even if you train in our dojo, like Gabe Kidd did and Jay White did. Just be like, we're going to have them and we're going to feature them. If they get over, that's great, but not necessarily build a company around them, like in some ways that Gedo had with some of those foreigners. That's always an option too.
And I think part of the whole, I think the Gabe Kidd discussion, a lot of that comes down to the fact that Kidd has, in a lot of ways, lapped his Japanese contemporaries in terms of young guys in New Japan. So it's like there's an excitement there in the sense of like, oh, Kidd is going to be the next guy for New Japan. But though there's always a looming question. It's like, well, once he gets really big, then he'll be off to North America. That seems the likely end game. Maybe not. Maybe he wrestles in Japan for his entire life, but this is a bit. I mean, look, it's like, and I know, like, he loves New Japan. He's got the all that stuff. He came up in the dojo, and it's the wrestling business. And the reality is, there's just a lot more money to be made for these guys, who in a lot of cases have a short period of time to try to make as much money as possible. And so there's that. That's part of the angst too, which is like, Kid is. I think more charismatic than a lot of the Reiwa generation guys. And so there's a feeling like, oh, it's going to be extra frustrating because Kid is the standout young guy in the company right now, and he's probably not long for New Japan, as opposed to some of these other guys who you can expect to anchor, who in theory would be anchoring the company for the next 10 years.
Well, let me put it this way. I mean, I think David Finlay could get a job in the States if he wanted to, but he's not going to get anywhere near of a push that he would in New Japan. And at the same time, I don't think there's that much demand for him. And I mean, like him, I think he's an underrated in some ways. At the same time, I don't think he could really partly build the company around him either.
He's been headed to NXT for about a decade now.
Yes, he has.
He's one day he's gonna get there. This is like Mike Bennett, who eventually did make it to WWE. Like Mike Bennett was rumored to be going to WWE for what felt like 10 years on the US Indies. And then he eventually did. But it was always like, oh, Mike Bennett, he's, you know, I think honestly it was just because he had a good body, like on the US Indies in like the early 2010s. And it was like, oh, he's going to WWE. Just, oh, he's such a WWE guy. Oh, but this is, he can't really push him because he's going to be going to WWE. And I feel like that's kind of similar to Finlay. Like, Finlay's been about to go to WWE like for a decade now, or pretty much ever since he debuted in New Japan.
Yeah, the people just thought he was in the dojo just to get training and then he would take off once the training was over, and maybe he put in a year or two, right?
That was the kind of idea, and obviously his, with his family connection and things like that to WWE. Well, I guess we'll close talking a little bit about Aaron Wolf. I don't have a lot of expectations for Aaron Wolf based kind of on what this discussion that we've had is. And I understand he's probably going to be a special case. I don't think he's going to be going on excursion. I don't think he's going to be like Shota Aminu and living in an apartment in Portsmouth, England, with a bunch of like college students or something like that. And like, okay, maybe they'll push him. I guess my point with him is like, okay, he could potentially be a big star. I really don't understand the context of like how popular of a celebrity he is in Japan. So like just like putting him on the marquee will draw fans to New Japan. I just don't know. I don't know enough about his star power in Japan. But I mean, until he starts wrestling, I just don't know. But obviously he's someone that people are that if you're looking at New Japan, like who is a big star that they're gonna push? Like he almost feels like he's like almost a Hail Mary play if you're gonna drop him right into the company and give him a monster push, but maybe he takes off. So he's kind of like a lingering question mark to me.
So I have reasonably high expectations for Aaron Wolf, and I'll get to some of the downsides in a second. Olympic judo gold medalist for Japan. He has gotten a lot of media attention. The head Takaki Kidani at the press conference, which makes me think that management is going to be watching his push very closely and probably are going to expect certain things. And I think that management has been generally hands off with Ghetto's booking, as far as I can tell. I don't know, maybe people know more than I do about that, but that's just the vibe I get. But I think they would intervene to make sure that Aaron Wolf will be being pushed properly. He's going to get a fast push. Now, there's also downsides. There's been people in the past, Hiroshi Wojima, Koji Kitao, to a certain extent, Naoya Ogawa, although he drew pretty big at the beginning of his career. And then there's also Shinsuke Nakamura, where he started off hot, but then he just like was good, but did not have all of the tools to be a main eventer, even though he was basically a main eventer instantaneously. And I talked about it before. Like he started in the main events, won the IWGP title very fast, and then sort of like floundered, shall we say, for a few years there until he reinvented himself. So yeah, it's not a guarantee, but they are going to push Aaron Wolf very hard. I don't know if they have fast-tracked him for the IWGP title, but it would not shock me if he wins it within like 2 years. It's not going to surprise me if he somehow wins the debut match, depending on who it is against. And so they're going to try him, and they are going to try to make him the new ace. What actually is, to me, the biggest red flag as a long-term ace for Aaron Wolf is, this man has been talking with Okada. Okada told him to go and learn in the New Japan Dojo to learn the business. If Okada's in his ear, though, that is no guarantee that this guy is going to stay
People
with New
are
Japan over the long term.
already dooming that he's going to be leaving too. Hasn't even won't
Well,
even debut for 6 more months, and he's
no,
already on the, headed out the door to Tony Khan.
I don't want to come across as too much dooming, but there was another company that everyone thinks is WWE that was interested in. He is, half Japanese, half American. I assume he speaks English. I don't know that for sure.
So I read that his father teaches English at a Japanese university. He's an American
Okay,
that
well
teaches English. So it
then
would
he
be
must
very shocking
certainly,
if he didn't
he, yeah.
speak
So
strong
he's,
English at that.
yeah, he's, so he speaks English. So he and but to me the red siren going off in this is that he has a relationship already with Kazuchika Okada, right? And Okada can tell him that you could make how much more money you can make in the United States as a pro wrestler and then in Japan. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm sure that he's getting a very nice salary from Bushiroad, and I'm sure that they are going to try and do things to keep him and make him a big star. I'm just simply saying, if he's talking to someone that was a big star in New Japan that made ju the jump to America to make even millions of dollars, that's something that has to be taken in consideration in the medium to long term. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it as a doomer that he's going to end up for sure in the United States in 2 years. Absolutely not. I'm thinking like more to 5 to 7, if that happens even, right?
He'll be wrestling Mark Briscoe on episode of Collision in no time. You wait, Gerard. He I yeah, like I said, like I don't have like really high expectations just because I don't know what he's gonna be like. Like he's gonna be under the microscope. Obviously, he's making his debut at Wrestle Kingdom. There's much fanfare with his debut in a way that like very opposite of what we see with normal New Japan guys, which is the Young Lions kind of make their debut in the dark matches, they're opening the show, and they work these basic 5-minute matches. It looks like, he's going to not only, make his debut Wrestle Kingdom, he's probably going to get like, a big entrance, and he's, I don't think he's going to be wearing the black tights. I don't think the finish, his finish is going to be a Boston Crab. I think he is, he's going to get a significant push in. And the fact that he is like the star power, and you mentioned Kidani being at the press conference, maybe that forces Gato to be more urgent than he wants to. Maybe Gato really is like, man, I want to send this guy on excursion and then come back. He'll come back and things like that. Maybe it forces them to be a little bit more aggressive. I just, I don't know. I keep hearing people say like, oh, he's really charismatic. And that may be true, but being charismatic in one sense and being charismatic in a professional wrestling sense is very different. And
Yeah,
I've seen,
absolutely.
like, I think of like Rob Gronkowski, who is like, everyone was like, oh, he'll be a natural at pro wrestling because he's Gronk. He's like a really charismatic football player. And then he was like, in WWE for a brief period of time. It's like, oh, his charisma doesn't translate at all. And that happens a lot. And with these guys like like you mentioned, Nakamura is like actually a good example in the sense of like you mentioned, you brought already kind of highlighted his early career history where he gets like this super push as this, he's the super rookie, wins the world title, all that kind of stuff like that. And then he kind of flounders. And a lot of that comes from not because he wasn't a quick learner, wasn't that he was a bad wrestler when he was getting this big push, but like it takes years and years of just being a professional wrestler to understand like how to pivot, how to present your character, how to get over with the audience, all these kind of things that may be independent of just winning a lot of matches. And it takes time for wrestlers to learn that. And that's something I'd also be apprehensive about, just like giving a super rookie a giant push. But like I said, he's a big question mark to me. He could come out and he could be amazing, could be a total natural pro wrestler, and he's like Kurt Angle or someone like that. I'm sure he's going to be well trained. It's not like he's going to, be one of these like people that you see on like, these women's wrestlers in WWE NXT where they seem like they don't know how to run the ropes even correctly. I'm sure he's going to be very fundamentally solid when he debuts, and I'm sure they'll have him. Who would you have him wrestle at the Tokyo Dome?
Possibly Yuji Nagata.
Yeah,
I
so
think
like a
Nagata is it
veteran,
because
like a real
right.
old, like a dad, like an old veteran wrestler.
I would also consider him consider putting him in it. You could, I mean, some wrestlers debut in tag matches. I would consider putting him in Bolton Oleg against Nagata and someone else.
Yeah, Oleg's an interesting guy too because I don't know if he'll ever get all the way there. And in terms of like physical charisma, kind of connecting with an audience connection and things like that.
I always say this about Bolton. If this were 1982, he'd already have been main eventing Sumo Hall against Antonio Inoki. No question in my mind. No question in my mind. But
with a Russian gimmick.
for sure. But it's not that. And I think getting the NEVER title beating Takeshita for that is a big deal. But it always at the back of the mind lingers. I don't know if Ghetto sees him like I do, or how people in the past in the wrestling business in Japan would have. Because
Well, and it's
I
also,
would definitely earmark it for big things if I were booking the fight.
yeah, if Inoki was in charge, Bolton Oleg would be. So you were bashing Inokiism, but it kind of sounds like you want Inokiism to kind of come back when it comes to evaluating Big Bolton here.
I think what I like, I do not like putting wrestlers into shoot fights or MMA. But I do like wrestlers with legitimate combat backgrounds learning to be professional wrestlers and becoming professional wrestlers.
Like, yeah,
I think that's a big difference.
I think he is going to potentially be an outstanding individual professional wrestler. Like I said, I'm worried about like crowd connection and physical charisma and him, that being the thing that kind of keeps him from being like a amazing professional wrestler that can headline the Tokyo Dome. But he's very, very good, and he, especially when you compare it to this roster, like when we were talking about earlier, like in Japan, they take pro wrestling seriously, like it's a real sport. You want to know who feels like he takes it seriously and it's a real sport, and when he gets in there and he looks the part, is Bolton Oleg. He's a perfect guy for that.
And that's a guy that knew nothing about professional wrestling.
Yeah, I mean he's kind of like you said, like you would t have him tag with Aaron Wolf. Like he's kind of the model. Now Bolton kind of went through a more I think like typical in a lot of ways young lion period. It looks like Wolf is going to kind of get a big push, but is kind of a similar kind of like a celebrity signing to a degree. He obviously wasn't a real celebrity, but he was a highly acclaimed amateur wrestler that they're like, look, we got this guy and he's going to be someone we're gonna, pretty
If I'm
seriously
not
push.
mistaken, he was one of the f first. J he was the first Japanese gold medalist in judo at the Olympics in quite some time, I think. So there's like a lot riding on him from that sort of aspect.
Yeah, like I said, I can't really speak to how big of a celebrity he is in Japan. I'm not gonna pretend to be like, oh, well, he's got, I saw this and that. But like, obviously, judo is obviously a big sport in Japan, and any Olympic gold medalist, especially I believe he won the gold medal at the 2020/2021 games in
Yeah,
Tokyo.
not the most high profile games globally, but he was going to always get attention in Japan for that feat.
You know, WWE has an Olympic gold medalist wrestler that they like do like absolutely nothing with, and she's been training for like
Tamara
2 years.
meant to stop.
I totally forgot about her. And
Yeah,
then like I think
I
Griffin
can't remember
posted.
the name. They gave her a name, a different name too. I
Yeah,
can't believe
they
that.
gave her a different name. She
Yeah,
should just
wow.
be like, yeah, just that's craziness. Yeah, Aaron Wolf. Now Aaron Wolf kind of already has an NXT name based on his shoot name. But like he's like if he was in NXT, they'd be giving him a new name. God forbid you Google this person and be like, oh my God, I didn't know this person.
You could be Rick Cougar.
I was thinking Wolf would be okay, but they'd give him like a really strange, like perhaps out of date first name. Like his name would be like Jedediah Wolf or something like that. All right, Gerard, we're gonna wrap up. Do you have anything you want to plug? Any recent episodes of the Emerald Flow show?
We just recorded earlier today, which is June 26th. So that episode's going to be coming out probably right around the same time that this episode drops. We talked about the finals of the Big Japan Strong Climb tournament. So we covered Big Japan for the first time in like a year because, well, not much happens in Big Japan these days. We went over a bunch of going ons in NOAH with their Monday Magic shows, which are always a very fun and unpredictable sort of weekly show that they do. And then we continue to talk about recent title matches in All Japan and continue to talk about what is going on with this promotion, what are they doing, and why this June Saito title reign has to end soon, and why we don't know where they're going next, basically, which I feel like is always a bad sign for a wrestling company that you don't know where the direction that it's headed.
Oh, should have had me tag in there for some June Saito bashing, which I managed to not do throughout this entire episode. I want to point out. All right, thanks a lot, Gerard. We'll talk to you again, and thanks again to all our listeners. I'll talk to you again after a while.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.